This is the BCA Podcast, the outreach arm of Beards Creek Adventures, and your weekly source for all things faith, family, and stewardship. We're your hosts, Charlie and Mike Culkin. Join us each week for interviews, discussions, laughs, and encouragement. We hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome back to BCA. So tonight it's just Charlie and I, and we've been bouncing around some topics to talk about, and sometimes I come with like a whole written out, like 2 weeks ago I had 3 pages of notes.
Yeah.
Tonight it was, we sat around dinner and said, well, what do we want to talk about?
And I think you said, well, we could do it in the morning. And I was like, yeah, but what are we going to talk about in the morning?
And part of it is, you want to have some engaging topics, things that will stir some controversy, right, or get, right, people thinking.
We need some clickbait.
Right. Like, it's too bad we don't have wolves being reintroduced into New York or, you know. Right. But
need something.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I did think about, and I don't know that this is one that we want to talk about, but we posted earlier this week a meme about two cats, and this one cat is just smacking the other one, and it's labeled as a bow hunter, and the other cat is a bow crossbow hunter, and it's just smacking, and it got like 200 likes and a whole bunch of people, you know, taking sides, and
and
I'm like, I don't see the controversy, quite honestly.
No, and it's, I can see the argument that crossbow hunting is not equivalent to archery hunting. I mean, like, sure. I spent years from, I don't know, when did Emily get her saw opened on Christmas, the little red bow that we had for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Started on that, and then I got the little bear from Gander Mountain, and then I finally upgraded to something I could hunt with, the diamond. I mean, it was my whole childhood we were shooting to some extent. My arrows didn't have enough weight behind them to go through the target.
Sure, sure.
But it was, I built up, and eventually, I got the muscle memory, and I could pick up a bow and shoot 10, 20, 30 yards without thinking about it, really. And then I shot a crossbow for the first time, and it was, I sighted it in like I would a rifle, and I was good to go.
Yeah.
You know, I can see that, where it's crossbow or archery, regular compound longbow, you have to put some time and effort into practicing and training. But outside that, the hunting, you're getting into the woods, and I'm biased in that. I think I do lean a little bit more towards the let them hunt. I think where we're at with the 2 weeks at the end of the season is perfect,
yeah,
and or for disabilities.
Yep.
But anything that gets people into the woods nowadays, I think we need. And that's my issue with the controversial topics that we got. We could talk about, you know, I can take a deer in flannel, or I can take a deer in Sitka. We can go all the way to the top.
And Aaron Curtis is talking to you.
Yeah, the cell cams versus the regular cam.
Yeah,
you can go and you can controversy and argue on every single topic in the hunting community. But I think ultimately we need to be, as a community,
yeah,
and I think we are, to an extent, despite the arguments. You know, Aaron and I have some disagreements on certain topics, but ultimately we're both hunters that want to get other people into the woods.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
he's taken his son out and taken others out, and
yep.
And that's what I think hunters need to recognize and share, is that ultimately our goal is the same, and that we enjoy and want to be able to enjoy the outdoors and spread it with others, as long as they're not hunting near or on my property and taking, right, my bucks, you know.
Well, and you know, here's the thing too, right? If they would just put "for me" at the beginning or the end of their sentence, like,
yeah,
"for me, crossbow hunting is just not something I want to do." Okay, good. For, yeah, you, that's great. But you know, for others, why would we want to limit people getting into the woods?
Right.
And if we do want to limit that, then that's on us. That's us being greedy.
I agree.
And there's a podcast that I remarked to and stopped listening to, because every single week it was, corn piles are bad and crossbow hunters are bad. And I'm like, come on, guys, you can sing a different tune. And, you know, I made a comment on their post, got like 30 some likes, because really life is all about the likes.
Yeah,
of course. But it was, you know, if it's legal, let them go. What do you care? And yeah, they were trying to say, well, there's science behind this, blah, 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 that more deer are being taken because of crossbow hunters. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
There's no hard science behind it. It's all it's all subjective or, you know, perceived science. Well, this is what I saw from one person, and so the whole nation is doing this.
Yeah.
And you have actually, you're the only one in our camp who's taken one with a crossbow.
Yeah. Yep, which as another part of it was like when I took that out, I was actually kind of mad I took the crossbow out that day because I hadn't gotten a compound, like I had not gotten a bow deer up until.
Right, it was the last night
of bow season. I know, it was the last night of bow season. I was getting in late. The wind was weird, so it was like the stand I'm going in is not ideal for,
right.
for
we, trying to By the way, we need to move that stand.
And this year. I do honestly think, as much as I was like, this buck came in 10 yards, or was, you know, like I could have gotten it with a compound, I'm not sure I could have stood up and not been seen where I was. Like, I as much as it came within range and gave me a broadside shot, I think it was a matter of I didn't have to move as much that gave me that opportunity. But, you know, I like getting into the woods.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately I want other people to experience that, and that's where it is.
Yep.
But I do think you're right with, for me. I know for me that like crossbow versus my compound, I'm really have the same amount of chances. Our crossbow that we hunt with is, I don't know, I think it goes up to 150 pounds maybe. Mm-hmm. And no more would I ever take a 45, 50 yard shot with that. Yeah. Maybe 50, but not.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm real comfortable at that range. It's just not, and maybe we don't have a real high end crossbow, you know?
Sure.
But my compound, I can take a 30. I practice at 40. If it really came down to it, I could compete pretty well with a compound or with a compound against a crossbow.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, there's this myth that's around that people are taking 100 yard shots with a crossbow.
Yeah. It's just a rifle on.
Right. And that's just not really how it is. And I'll say this, I've got a whole bunch to say. Wow, we've got a topic. that I don't think rifle hunters shoot enough either.
Yeah.
You know, people will sight their rifles in and then they'll put them away for the summer. Well, I'm one of those people that I want to shoot a couple times at least. And I know the cost of ammunition and even making my own ammo and all that kind of stuff. But I want to shoot a bunch to be able to be confident with my rifle.
And I was guilty of that some, especially with like my muzzleloader. I know going into the season before when I was going up to ranger school.
Yep.
You know, I was taking online classes through July. I went to ranger school early August. I just didn't have a full summer like I normally would. And I don't know if I shot my 30-30 at all. And I had taken a deer that past fall with it. So, you know, in my mind, it's been sighted in and there's no problem. Well, naturally that season I take it out in the first opportunity I get. I miss the same doe, I think two or three times. And I was like, all right, I'm putting this away until I get sighted in.
Well, it doesn't take much to bump that scope. Right. You know, just the drive out to Uncle JD's was enough to, or throwing it on your shoulder for two days.
Yep. And I know I can put crosshairs on a deer. I know the ranges I'm comfortable at, you know, but it is different, you know, one rifle to the other, a muzzleloader to a rifle. There's as much as I grew up hunting and I could pick up just about any rifle that's sighted in and I could hit a target. There is a something to be said about being comfortable with the rifle you're hunting with.
Yeah, absolutely. There's muscle memory. So I have 6 steps that I go through every time I shoot. So it's build a solid foundation, right? Get my feet flat, get the gun into my shoulder. Breathe into my environment, you know, slow my breathing down, aim small, miss small.
Yep.
Then it goes to squeeze the trigger and it's a slow, you know, slow, it's a slow
smooth,
squeeze.
Smooth as fast.
That's exactly what I tell myself. And then follow up the shot, you know, keep it in the scope as much as I can.
Yep.
And then the last one is prepare for the next shot, you know, so that if I've got to put another.
Yep.
So I have those steps and each time I target, shoot, even whether off the bench or not. Like, I try and drill those same steps into my head.
So I was just going to note on that is that I have those six steps when I'm shooting a target. I'm just trying to shoot the lid off a bottle or something, right, you know. Right. But then I get I get into this stand and I'm not thinking about that.
No.
I'm not thinking about those steps. I'm thinking, that's the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
He's moving and I'm trying to get him to stop right now. I'm trying to get in a position that I can actually get a shot. There's so many other things going into play that if I didn't have the muscle memory, if I didn't have the practice ahead of time to think about, you know, I can't think about both. When I'm target practicing, I'm thinking about the rifle. I'm thinking about shooting.
Yeah.
And now when I go to actually hunt, I can think about the scenario I'm in, the buck I'm shooting, the, you know, whatever else is going on. I don't have to necessarily put all my focus into shooting because that's muscle memory at this
and
point.
And that's why you practice. And that's why you practice with a rifle just as much, you know, with a bow. And not just as much, but you practice both because you want that muscle memory to take over. So the crossbow we have is not ours.
No, it belongs, is not.
It belongs to a good friend of Beards Creek, Buddha, and he has left it here for 3 years. You filmed him one time.
I'm so mad he didn't get whack rack.
So tell that story, because I don't think that's ever been on the podcast.
It I'm sure it's been at least mentioned.
Yeah.
That was a fun hunt all around. That was the one that you ended up taking
the five point,
and we were set up in a blind. We set up at the beginning of that hunt. We went in a little early. You know, we were in by two, and we set up this blind at the corner of a field where we knew that they kind of came out to graze, and it was a nice spot. And the first deer we saw was whack rack. Jumped out from the weeds behind us and jumped 2 feet from the blind. And I kind of heard some rustling behind, couldn't tell if it was a squirrel, what it was. I was like, that's gonna, and I kind of whispered to Buddha. I was like, I think there's something behind us. And I look over to my left and he's staring right at me through the window of the blind. And he's just kind of looking at us and he immediately bounds off. But it wasn't like it was a weird run, you know, like sometimes you spook him and you're like, I'm not seeing that buck again for a week. Like that is gone. He kind of bounded off and would look back and, like, it wasn't enough that, like, he knew something was up, but he didn't know what.
Sure.
So then he comes back out along with a couple other doe and a little spike. And I've got the camera set up, so I'm kind of getting a feel for what we've got out there. I had the rangefinder on me, so I'm giving him ranges. I'm like, all right, he's coming in. He's at 50 yards now. Buddha's like, all right, I've only shot this a handful of times. I want to make sure he's close. You know, I don't want to – which was great.
Yeah, good
except
for him.
When he finally got close enough and we could kind of tell he was headed to go back into the woods – the only opportunity, broadside, I think maybe 30 yards. It might have been 32 kind of thing. He had to shoot out of the side window, not out of the front where we were set up for. And he leaned out, and his sights were good. And this is a difference between a rifle and a crossbow. Crossbow has arms that has to extend when you shoot. And so even though his arrow and his scope were right out the window and he was set up perfectly, when that left arm hits the side of the blind, it tends to rock things a little bit. So ultimately, he didn't end up even hitting the deer, which was just a disappointment. And it wasn't a huge buck, but I think it would have been his first.
Yeah, yeah.
Let alone with a crossbow. And it would have been really cool because we had been tracking that
buck. Yeah, we were seeing whack rack that year all the time. So, and he had a broken off tine and some weird stuff going on. So he's a unique buck.
But yeah, and that was a cool for me. That was my first really to be taking somebody out. You know, like I had spent a lot of time when I was little being taken out and kind of getting to experience some of that. And then it was hunting individually. And I've always said and believed that you're never truly a master at something until you can teach it to somebody else.
Sure, sure.
And that's kind of what I felt in that moment of being able to walk him through this process and being able to say, okay, we're going to set up here because the wind is like this. We're going to face this way and we're going to wait and we're going to, you know, this and talk him through it. It really clicks in your head that I'm confident in being able to say that this is what we're doing. It wasn't in my head. I'm thinking it through on my own. It was being able to say, this is something I've gone through. This is what we're going to do.
Right.
And so that was a cool experience to be able
and
to
you,
say.
And you got some good footage of whack rack that night.
Well, I got the video of the miss too.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I got a good picture of the two of you heading out from camp. And, mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of guests here.
Yeah.
And so for you to take somebody, and I don't think you took a bow. I think you just took the camera.
No. Yeah. I took just the camera and the rangefinder.
Yeah. Yep.
And,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It was unique. I mean, I took Rachel out opening day this season. I know we talked about that. And I did bring a rifle for that one. And I think my words, something along the lines of, if the buck is big enough, do you trust yourself to take it or am I going to take it? And she pretty confidently said, you're taking it if it's like, because she wanted, and she was mad. The one deer that we had come through was that smaller doe that Jake mm-hmm. ended up mercy killing. And I think it was injured that day.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least it was when it came through. That's the one that Ryan saw.
Yeah, Ryan saw it too.
And she told me afterwards, and naturally she tells me after the fact, that she wished I had shot because she just was nervous and didn't have a great, and she,
yeah,
which it is what it is. And I think for her, she's experienced the adrenaline rush now
yep.
of what it's like to have a deer in her sights to be in that moment. The next time it comes around, I think she'll be able to pull the trigger. Well,
and the plan was for me to go with her, and then I had that funeral. Yeah. And so I have been haunted all season by the fact that you guys saw two bucks, two decent shooters that day, mm-hmm. and then I didn't see another one the rest of the season. And thinking, yeah. oh, gosh, I got to hunt opening day on our property.
The one that haunts me is I took her out, and the blind that we set up in, I wasn't far. The stand I was going to set up in was kind of the one on in the honey hole, above the honey hole. I think Emily's stand.
Yeah.
Was kind of what I was thinking, because you get a pretty good view.
Yeah.
And that big buck that we saw that was bolting went right by it. Like, I really think had I not had Rachel and I was in the stand, I would have gotten a shot.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's more important, getting Rachel out and getting her to experience sure. an opening day and get to see that, or right. taking
and you really, did get really a deer.
Buck, yeah.
Of course, it was the second to the last day of the season.
It was well-earned is the way I like to word it. Well-earned
is right. Yeah, so. And you know, to come full circle, I took Rachel 3 years ago bow hunting, and the only buck we saw had all kinds of a mess on one side. And she was younger at that point. And I said, well, we got to come up with a name with him. He goes, well, I don't know. What do you want to call him? He's got all that garbage on the side. So she named him Oscar. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's a great name.
Yeah, it would have been a great first buck for me. Or no, that would have been my second buck.
Yeah. So Oscar came to me opening morning of rifle, and I dropped him.
Yeah. I was well aware. I was like, what, 30 yards from the buck, and just didn't pull the trigger fast enough, I guess.
No. Well, he came right at me. Of course, I'm going to shoot him. He was a good buck.
Yeah.
10-point and just bizarre rack. And
yeah. yeah. It was unique. That was pretty cool.
Yep. And then you got a buck that morning.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, we tagged out. I was able to get warm and make some bacon and eggs, and Jake's still out in the cold. It was great.
Yeah, I wandered Those out with a tractor and threw two deer in the bucket, and yeah, it was a good morning.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I just, the crossbow thing, okay, maybe like we break up the seasons and do a traditional archery, a compound archery, and then a crossbow. I think the way they're doing it now is pretty good. I think of like Uncle Steve, who, you know, because of age and stuff, he crossbow hunts exclusively. Well, then he gun hunts. But mm-hmm. And I'd love for him to have the opportunity to go out earlier in the fall. Mm-hmm. I think Papa probably would have kept hunting maybe if he could have crossbow hunted earlier.
At least during archery.
Yeah. And so I don't see the issue with it.
Yeah. Not the issue that they make it out to be.
Right.
And I say when I talk to guys that are like anti crossbow.
Yep.
But they hunt a compound.
Right.
If they want to get rid of or separate the crossbow season, I say we got to separate the compound season from the traditional archery season.
Exactly.
If you're saying that you're that much better because you practice a little bit more because your bow doesn't have a trigger that you can rest up on in a red dot sight, well, let's go back and let's get a recurve or a longbow where you make your own arrows.
Yep. And it's funny because that was the controversy in the 70s. When you know the bear first came out with a compound bow, you know, everybody screamed and shouted about that. That's not hunting, blah, blah, blah. Well, and I'm sure, you know, when they went from a spear to a traditional bow, there was, and ironically, the crossbow's been around longer than the longbow. Right. So, you know, what do you...
Well, that's an interesting point. I've never thought to argue when it comes to hunting is when you look back medieval times, the reason that they chose crossbows for like military over longbows wasn't because they were faster or they were more efficient. In fact, a medieval archer that was trained and mm-hmm. good could shoot. There's a statistic out there, it's 3 or 4 times as many arrows as a crossbow. However, it took years to train a good archer. You know, Robin Hood wasn't a good archer right off the
overnight,
bat.
Right?
You know, and so the benefit to crossbow was they could train a recruit to use a crossbow and to hit a target pretty consistently in a week or two. You know, and we can look that all throughout history. I mean, as terrible as war has advanced technology just time after time. You know, every war we get something new. So then you look into Civil War. The Civil War was one of the first wars fought with rifles that had rifling.
Yeah.
And then they were still fighting with old school tactics where they were lining up. And that's why it had one of the highest casualty percentages is because they were lining up like they would have in the Revolutionary War or in a previous war. But they were a lot more accurate. Each soldier was hitting the other soldier. And and so then you go from that to, well, now they were, that war introduced cartridges rather than single rounds.
Yep.
And so now I'm was getting
that
fiber.
Was that Sharps? Was that the first cartridge? Well, I don't know. It might have been the 30-30 or the 30-06. One of those two was, or one of those was the first.
I wouldn't be able to confidently say, you know, without, I'm sure some of these facts are going to get debated in the or the captions on a
comment section on a or something,
podcast and post or something. And so you just kind of build that up through history. And every time something advances, there is somebody that's old school that says, oh, that's not the way we used to do it. And I see that in everything, you know, in forestry, we've got, I like to think of myself as a middle ground between the new age and the traditional. Cause I went to ranger school. I went to BOCES. I did all these things where I did the nice safety trainings. And this is how you fell now. That we're using these techniques. We're using a more open face. We're not using the 45s. We're using like a 70 to 90 degree. You know, there's all these, we're plunge cutting. Plunge cutting was never a thing, even 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I never learned it.
Right. Which is just, and I'm kind of in that middle ground of, then I was also trained by a guy that's been in the field for 33 years and is a pretty strong proponent of the we're just gonna do it anyway kind of generation.
Who are you talking about,
Jay?
Oh, because I was gonna say, because you learned all that crap, I mean all those safety things, and mm-hmm. then the reality is though, I taught you for a number of years of, okay, this tree looks like it's gonna drop that way, put a face cut in and drop it.
Which, and I think that works in most scenarios.
Just don't stand in the way.
Get ready to run. That is something I strongly believe. If I had to make a safety training for felling in general, it would include something that forces you to do reaction.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm trying to think of
always
term.
Know your escape route.
Well, and it's... Yes, as much as you can, much as you can plan your escape route, as much as you can plan the direction you're failing and wedges and plunge cuts and every piece of safety, the one thing that has saved me more time, any time I have been in a scenario that something went wrong, you never plan for something to go wrong. You never, you know, I'm planning that this is going to go this way and I know it's going to go that way. Well, obviously, it doesn't always go that way. The thing that saves me is being able to react. I've dropped to the ground once or twice and had it miss me because of, you know, I was able to dive out of the way or jump out of the way or whatever. And I think that's
the worst barber chair I've ever had. I clearly didn't plan for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a basswood, or maybe it was an ash. And I mean, I put the face cut in, started going along. But I have learned to keep back when I'm cutting. And all of a sudden this thing popped. I'm like, holy cow. And it, and this barber chair had to be 12 feet high. I mean, and I just couldn't, I like in my mind, I could not grasp the fact that it had barber chaired.
Yeah.
And, fortunately I was on my game and was watching for it. And once it popped, I was able to get out of there, but it doesn't, you don't often get that much time to think. And so you got to set yourself up even beforehand.
Yeah.
How did we get to this?
Well, I was just going to say, I got to go back to, I think I lost my point. I talk about this all the time with my coworker that I got ADHD because we'd have an hour and a half drive to the job site, you know, and we'd get on a topic and we'd be talking and I'd be like, oh, I never even finished the point I was trying to make on our original topic. Right. And we'd jump a half an hour ago to what we were first talking about.
Does your coworker listen to this podcast?
Sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I won't mention them.
he's a big podcast guy. And when he found out that we had one and he loves the Christian Outdoor podcast. I said that you had done stuff with Pete Rogers, he was like, what? You guys actually have that's a real podcast. That's just not two idiots recording. And
these two idiots. It's had 480 listeners last 2 weeks ago. So it's, you know, it's funny just talking podcast stuff. I've got some like top tier guests lined up in the next coming months.
Yeah, I hear Chris Walker might be on here.
Yeah, Chris was not on that top tier list, but some like names that people will absolutely know. And typically those are the ones that don't do as well.
Really?
Ironically, I don't know what it is.
I know, I would.
I don't know if people just like to listen to our
tomfoolery.
Right. But
well, so anyway, what I was saying 10 minutes ago before I rudely interrupted myself with other thoughts was that there is always going to be a new age and an old age way of thinking. There is always going to be some old timer who's doing it better than you are for whatever reason, because they're just doing it the way that they were raised doing it. And I've seen that in everything. I mean, I started trapping and I saw it and did it in forestry, both in the forestry aspect and the arborist side of things. And I think we're going to see that in hunting until the end of times, or at least until hunting's over.
And today's stuff will be the old guard in 30 years. And you know, here's the thing too, is that like I've hunted with some old guard people. Like, this is the way we do it. We drive the entire Adirondack Woods, you know, whatever.
Well, you'll find all three deer that are up there.
That's right. And I learned, oh gosh, it's been 30 years since I was in college and learned to fell trees. Mm-hmm. But I have learned as much, you know, recently with you and even Emily coming back from ranger school than I did 30 years ago. Yeah. And learned safe practices, those kinds of things, the SOPs, that kind of thing. And it's interesting, we used to see that with when we taught hunter ed classes, that those younger hunters, we would teach them, and then we would hear from older hunters, parents that were taking the class or their kids or whatever, and those kids would then say to their dad, hey, point that muzzle in the safe direction, that kind of thing. Like, I think there's a healthiness to those newer folks bring a safety factor to it.
But I don't think you need to forget what you previously learned. And that's something I've heard said before, is that I've taken, I did some safety training with you. I remember the first time you let me run a chainsaw, it was a rotted log, probably dulled the chain right off the bat.
Yeah. Did I make you read to fell a tree before that or after?
No, I didn't read that till ranger school.
Because I gave it to you before you left.
Yeah, because I needed it for ranger school.
Yeah, I was thinking I made you read it.
But it was, I remember that first. So I got some training with you. I got some training at BOCES. I did 2 years of that.
Yep.
Ranger school, I did a bunch. I went to Tri-State and I learned everything I know in terms of bucket cutting and aerial cutting. And then I went to the state and we did a whole nother USDA mosh pit training that I'm now training to become a trainer.
And I've
done these 3, 4, 5 different trainings, and it's not that this is the one that we're doing. I didn't take this new training because that's the only way I'm going to do it. The way it's been worded to me is it's a tool in your toolbox. It's okay, I've got this way of training, this is probably the safer way of doing it, and this is the safest way of doing it, but in this scenario, when I took a training at BOCES, he mentioned this and none of the other trainings mentioned. This is something that I know I can now do because I learned it. And it might be an old way of doing it, but it's going to work better in this scenario.
Sure. And, you know, the other thing, too, is there's a difference when, at least in the cutting world, when you're cutting every day or 4 days a week or 3 days a week versus, okay, I've taken 3 months off and now I'm going to go back to cutting.
Yeah.
There is a difference. Yep. You forget things pretty easily and you've got to remind yourself. You've got to, you know, and usually the way I remind myself is I'm doing a plunge cut and I hit the attack corner and then I'm like, oh boy, yeah. I almost lost, you know, you that know. Kind of thing. And plunge cutting, like I first saw it, when we had the guys timbered our mm-hmm. property. We had a bunch of hickory trees timbered and I watched them, plunge, and then he always left the trigger and he would trigger it when he was ready. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like I didn't realize you could do it. And then you and I started talking about it. And then I tried it a couple of times and there's still a basswood that's hung up in a hickory tree out there or in an oak tree. But you gotta practice it. And you have to have a healthy fear of a chainsaw, just like a healthy fear of a gun or a healthy fear of a bow.
Yep.
But it's a healthy respect. It's not necessarily a healthy fear. You need to know that this thing's going to bite you.
Confident, not comfortable.
Right, exactly. Like I have a scar on my leg from this summer from a chainsaw. It's the first time I've ever been cut from a chainsaw. And it was, you know, I had slapped a new chain and didn't bother, you know, they stretch, didn't run it and tighten it up.
Yep.
It was entirely my fault. So, and by the way, you need to wear chaps all the time.
Yeah, or a hard hat.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. I mean, I had a concussion that took 3 months to get over.
Yeah.
And I don't know that a helmet was necessarily going to help me with that.
It would have, I think it would have helped. It might not have, you know, prevented.
Yeah.
Really, the best thing would have been not standing under a falling branch, but, you know, not all of us are that quick. It's because you didn't play as many video games as I did growing up. My reaction time is so fast, I'm like a ninja.
Yeah, that's just what it is. You're bucking to get hit.
Yeah, I'm jinxing it now. I'm waiting.
It was a dead tree. I cut it and it hung up in vines. And then I went to cut the next tree.
Yep.
And that one broke free of was breaking free of the vines, and the other one dropped. And I never even thought about it. And man, it caught me on the head and the shoulder. And that was in August, and I was still having post-concussion symptoms in November, sitting in a tree stand, getting nauseous and dizzy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
scary stuff.
Yeah. Well, and you, I know you probably can't talk much about it, but you guys lost somebody.
Yeah. Over in the, a neighboring region to ours, there was an incident, and I wasn't a part of it. But anytime you hear in your field, everybody says, hey, felling in the timber industry is the highest rated fatality of any job.
Yep.
And it's, you know, I know that and everybody knows that going into it, but we still do it. And I think some of us do it because we think, oh, it's not going to be me.
Right.
Some of us do it. I've got all these training. It's not going to be me, but I'm sure that guy did it. Had the same thought of, if it's not going to be me. And I didn't know him personally.
Yeah.
I had never met him, but I knew some of the guys that he worked with, and I knew that they were a pretty top-notch crew as they go. At least they're, I've worked pretty closely with their supervisor, their boss, because we're in the same position. So he kind of got me rolling over here. And he called me after I had already heard about it. He gave me a call and was just kind of let me know what was going on. It's a sobering moment. Just to have a conversation with somebody that you know that they just, he's a bit of an odd duck to begin with. He's got this habit of giggling to himself, but there was none of that in this conversation. Yeah. It was a straight faced conversation, and he tried to be kind of to be up on, just checking in with me, making sure everything was up and kind of let me know. And he said that he kind of checked the scenario and walked it through after the fact because he wasn't there for it. And he really is shocked. He's like, I know this guy knows better. And I don't know exactly what happened, And he didn't really at the time either, but he was like, it's just something to be mindful of, yeah. No matter how much training you got.
Stuff just happens so quick.
Yeah.
So quick out there. We encourage habitat management, and part of that is FSI and TSI, the mm-hmm. cutting of trees, but it happens quick, and no amount of training is necessarily going to save you from that. A lot of it, unfortunately, is experience based. Yeah. But it's being mindful of what you're doing, what the potential dangers are, what your escape routes are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is really, and for you, running a crew at 20 years old, right? I mean, logging or arborist, whatever you want to, fancy name you want to put
depends on what I'm doing.
Cutting, it's a young man's game. At 51 years old, I'm just hammered after a day of cutting.
Yeah.
It's a young man's game. And so at 20 years old, you're approaching your prime years of it, but you're also overseeing a crew.
Yep.
That's sobering. You're responsible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've thought about that with this new guy that I'm training up. I mean, he had never touched a saw, and now he's telling me he just bought a Husqvarna, like a 461 or something. Yeah. Like
you
that.
Still and got some training to do then if he's buying Huskies. I tease Husky's a good saw, but I've had steels that ran that are now running three times longer than my Huskies.
Yeah. Did. Yeah. And it's kind of one of those things where, he's not really felling with me yet. He doesn't have the official state training. We've done some, some bucking, some limbing, some little stuff like that. I've let him drop a stick or two that, I topped, and it's nothing to drop. Yeah. And just so he can take that practice. And eventually when we get to that course, but here's the scary thing is I think he knows more than any one of the people that are going to take the course because he's worked with me for a month or so now.
Right
next to me, pounding wedges. He knows different face techniques that that you don't learn necessarily in these trainings. And this training, we're going to teach some people that have never touched a saw. We're going to say, hey, this is 2-3 days. This is everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Go out and you're good to go. And they're changing that mindset a little bit. The reason we swapped to this training is there's tiers. There's the first tier where they can only buck. They're not allowed to fell. Then they can fell, but not directionally. If it's leaning this way and it's a very basic, okay, you can do it. But you're not pounding wedges and roping and swinging this tree, And then there's the top tier, which is directional felling. And then there's the trainer for directional felling is really the top tier.
And then when you get past that, then there's Papa's school of directional felling. Were you with us when we did Uncle Dave's tree?
I was. I remember the game of hammer toss.
Oh my gosh. Or the tree we took down next to the Dead Nuts cabin. You were there for that.
I was on the four-wheeler for that.
Yeah, we should all be dead at some of those.
Oh, that one was, and it's the cabin should have had no roof by the end of that one.
I know, I'm standing on the roof topping that tree. What the heck was I doing? Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's a level 5.
Yeah, for the state. there is a little bit of as much as I can go through all the safety trainings, that's what got me into it.
Yeah.
And I talk about this all the time is that the reason I fell, the reason I enjoy it so much is there is an adrenaline, there is a bit of a rush there of, and I don't necessarily consider myself an adrenaline junkie.
No.
But I like that it forces me to be on my toes.
Yeah.
There's thinking, there's physical, but there's also, I gotta be on my toes.
And if something goes wrong. There's very little that is as satisfying as putting a tree exactly where you want it.
Oh yeah.
When it drops on the ground and you can put a stick in the ground, 40 feet out and know you're going to hit that thing. There's just, there is adrenaline to it.
Yeah. It'll catch up to me eventually, but I love you could quote me on it probably 7 times a day minimum if I'm consistently dropping thinking, I don't know if we're going to squeeze that through there. And Joe going, okay, so should I get the rope and are we going to, I'm feeling ballsy today. And that's the line. I'm feeling ballsy today. Yep. Every time we get to a tree, then I'm like, I don't know if I can miss that connection box for that. I did that a little, as a tree had a top that was leaning. The tree was pretty straight.
Yeah.
The top went out about 20 feet to the one side.
Yeah.
So if I dropped it straight the way it was leaning, and then the top was heavy to that left side. Had I dropped it straight, that left side was going to hit this box. And I knew, I mean, I paced out that height.
Mm-hmm. You paced it.
More.
Because you can't probably tell this on a podcast, but you could do a stick measure. Yes,
so I did. So okay. That's where I knew where the top was going to land. But what I did is I went from the trunk to the edge of the drip line of that top,
yeah.
Having that heavy to the left. What I did was if the trunk lands dead on where I'm aiming, is the top going to land on the
right,
and
right.
So that's what I paced is I stepped underneath the trunk, looked up and paced, I don't know, it was like 15, 20 feet of drip line, which is just the edge of where all the branches are.
Right.
And then I went out to that connection box to see how far I needed to aim the trunk before I would miss. And it was kind of one of those, like, I don't know. And so the hope was that it would roll.
Yeah.
So the hope was that as it came off, that top would turn. And so it was falling
sure.
the top down rather than the top parallel to right. the ground. And the stick would land in line with all of that
heavy. So you wedged heavier one side.
So what I did was I didn't do a real open face.
Okay.
So it would break off its hinge. And I hinged heavier on one side.
Yeah.
So the one side pulled a little bit. And once that hinge broke, it rolled yep. because it's got that extra weight. It yep. wants to twist. And I mean, it was maybe a couple of feet from the and it really probably would have been just as fast to get a rope.
Sure.
Toss a rope. The issue there was, it would have been a little bit of effort because it wasn't a great spot to throw a rope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Throw a rope into it and tie it off to the truck or to the come along or even just the Joe.
Well, and see, right. Now you're cutting in the state campgrounds.
Right.
By and large. So there's open woods in a lot of this. So a lot of what we're doing here is within the woods. And okay, I'm going to try and drop this top between 16 other trees. It's a whole nother ball game, you know?
Yeah.
And more often than not, I'm ending up having to step those trees down, or mm-hmm. now I've got a leaner, and am I going to take the one that it's leaning on, you know, and that just creates a whole bunch of issues.
Yeah.
And do you, your face cuts, you had taught me to start shallow and to go deeper, to do a longer face cut.
It's...
And then to bring my kerf around...
Yeah,
at the 90. What are you doing now?
So that's another one where is very much so tools in the toolbox. When I started at Bosie's, we were still doing the 45.
Mm-hmm.
It was you're going down at about a 45, and then you come in and do your bottom cut level.
Right, and that's what I learned.
The issue with that is once that tree, which is up at a 90, goes down to 45, it's still got 45 degrees before it hits the ground.
Yep.
So that hinge will break and it's free falling. So now what they say is to do more towards a 70, which is a Humboldt or an open-faced notch. And they say an open notch. They don't say face, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
An open-faced notch, because that way it the top hits the ground before the hinge breaks. And so it's being guided the whole way down. It's not free-falling. And so that's the upside to that. The depth, I have some opinions on whether or not it really... physics comes into play there. Ranger school taught to do shallow. So I was going in, you know, you want 80% of your total diameter is the goal.
On your face cut?
Yes.
Wow. So I always was taught a third.
So you're not going in 80%. It's the width. So if my hinge is 10.
Sure.
Or if my tree's diameter is 12 inches.
Yep.
I want my hinge to be at the 10 inch mark.
Yep.
So that's how wide it is. Because that would be, if I went to 12 inches, if my hinge was 12 inches, I'm at 50% of the tree.
Yeah.
So it still rounds out to about a third or 30% or roughly. And that's a funny one. We show that picture in the explanation in all of our trainings, and we show both. We show this is, you know, the 80% of your total diameter, and then we show like the third of the width kind of thing. And everybody's eyes are just, what are these percentages? what is DBH? that's the one that cracks me up is they say, oh, you're going to go to a 30% of your DBH. Okay, well, I'm not cutting at DBH. I'm cutting 4 feet cutting lower than DBH. Much lower.
So DBH, for those that are listening, is diameter at breast height.
Yes.
So when you measure a tree's circumference, you're measuring it at breast height, not at the trunk, like at the base of the tree.
And when you get real technical, it's 4.5 feet up. Right, and then you got to account for if there's a bulge, then you got to go half a foot above the bulge. And then if it's a split trunk, but all intents and purposes,
you can take care of after the cut.
Even. Right. So, right. So we do those weird trainings and we tell them these percentages and nobody ever understands. And then you kind of show them and they're like, okay, I know what I'm looking for.
And then everything goes out the window when you're in a bucket or when you're climbing.
Oh, yeah.
You're literally cutting all but 10% and, dropping it off. Or you're doing a snap cut, that all goes.
Oh, it's a totally different game. And that I'll head on a second. But so anyway, my face is now, or I'm doing about the 30% in. Jay has always yelled at me when I was at Tri-State previously because I didn't go deep enough. He said, you should be going at least 50% of the depth into the tree because you want all of that weight is on that. Really, physics-wise, I don't know if necessarily the weight is going to work quite that. You would have to exceed the 50% mark for you to get that, make that leverage there.
Unless you had like some main branches. Yeah,
unless you had a lot of weight. Yeah. On one side, and then you're going to want to do a normal cut and plunge anyway. Ultimately, I tend to like a shallower face, I think, because I can get more in terms of wedges in.
Yes, exactly.
I can get but again, that is going to depend tree to tree. How big is this tree in terms of diameter? Or where is it going? Am I going to need wedges? Am I not? Am I going to plunge cut? Am I not? And so that's where it's tools in a toolbox.
Yep.
I don't use one face 100% of the time.
Okay.
And then in a bucket is a different game. And that's been fun. I've been up in at the cabins at this park. And we got an 80-foot, 85-foot JLG man lift. Which I hate coming, and everybody at the park loves the man lifts over the bucket truck because a bucket truck is hard to get in places, which is true. And they're like, and you have to set up the outriggers, and then setting up outriggers takes a lot more. That's true, but you can set it up anywhere. It doesn't matter that really the incline, you can put wheel chocks in and then you can set up the outriggers as long as it's not above like 15% incline.
Right.
A JLG, if one of my tires is in a pothole, if I'm kind of on some soft ground, if I'm on more than 5% incline, it yells at me and it won't boom out. Wow. So now I have to be on fairly level ground to do anything. And maybe it's just the one that we got, but when I'm at full extent, this thing is sketchy. I mean, I'm trying to move my joystick just to move my basket a hair to the right. Yeah. I mean, a hair, and the whole thing swings. And I'm bumping into trees now. And I've got, the nice thing about it, I will say, is I've got this basket that's meant for two people.
Yeah.
So I've got my scabbard that holds one saw that I'm actively cutting with. I'll have another saw on the ground. So I normally bring it, but 261 and a bread cutter. I have brought up the 362, but normally it's just a 261 and a bread cutter. And I'll bring up my split tank with oil and gas, so I don't have to go back down if I'm up there for a long time. I'll keep a rope, and then I'll keep my tool bag that has a block and a couple of slings and everything. So I don't need to go down now, which is great.
Okay, so you got to back up and explain what those terms are. What is a bread cutter? I know, but
So a bread cutter is a top handle.
Yeah.
Which
doesn't help people that are listening to this.
A top handle is a smaller saw. So the one we run is a TO1 TC, which is just means it's got a computer in it.
Yeah.
And it's
theoretically you can use it one-handed.
It's designed to be able to use one-handed, although the manual and every steel thing is going to tell you have to use two hands because they're covering their butts.
Right.
But the whole thought process is I can cut this branch and I can hold it with my left hand at the same time.
Yep.
And so that way I can toss this branch or I can swing it one way or the other versus, a larger saw, I've got to have both hands on it. now that branch is just going to fall wherever it's fallen, and I don't have as much control over it. So
do
that's
you,
what that
do
is.
You rope every piece that you drop?
Not unless I have to.
Right. So like a 4 or 6 foot chunk, you're not going to have to rope that.
Yeah. And it depends on where I'm at. Joe doesn't have a ton of experience roping. So he, earlier this week, I think Monday afternoon, it was the first time I had gotten in a lift with him there. We went up, and then I had a larger chunk.
Did he go up with you?
No.
Okay.
No. So he's on the ground. He's my groundie.
Yep.
He's there. He's trained to lower the lift if something goes wrong.
Yep.
And that way, if I need to rope, he's down there, and I can. He's watched a lot of videos, mm-hmm. so he understands the concepts. He just hasn't put a lot of them to practice.
Okay. So the key question here is, does he choose Red Bull or coffee?
Big Red Bull guy.
Yeah. See, and groundies always are the energy drinks.
He gets up at 2 to 3 a.m. every morning.
Yeah.
He goes, works out with his buddy. There's something else in his morning routine. And then he comes to work at 7, gets home. And unless he has like jujitsu or something, he'll go right to sleep at like 7 in the afternoon. Like just crazy.
The guys that are up in the air tend to be the old timers, and they're coffee guys.
Yeah,
that's the big difference.
I'm neither. I'm not a big. If I do coffee,
you will be.
If I do coffee and I go up in the air, I'm going to be coming down because I've got to go take a sleeve off my shirt.
That's a polite way of putting it.
Means I got to drop a deuce.
Yeah. At some point, we're going to bring this all back to scripture. You know that, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I used that in a club talk.
Did you?
And Kyle politely told me I probably said drop a deuce. He said he counted. He recorded it. I said it 3 or 4 times. And he was like, in the one time, it caught me off guard, and it was funny. There was just the story was that you left me at church.
Yeah.
Like Jesus was left in the temple.
Yep.
That was the scripture it was based on. And I was comparing it to the time I was left at church, despite telling my mom, don't leave without me. I have to go take a deuce. I got to drop a deuce. And that's what I said. And it was funny, but then I referred to it like 2 or 3 other times within the talk. And so then I was saying, and I might have mentioned something about Jesus probably wasn't left in the temple because he was dropping a deuce. I think there was something along those lines was stated. And so it was probably a little much on the terminal, wow. You know, but it was.
But it connects with kids.
It was, and, yeah, you know, it was
that's
funny.
What there young was life some, is all about. So,
but. So yeah, he's a Red Bull guy. Yeah. Or Celsius, or it's different.
It's energy drinks.
It varies. Every now and then I'll have an energy drink, but it's it is coffee. It's the Monster coffees, but that's on
rare occasion. You can always tell an old-time cutter, because they'll show up with a Dunkin' cup or a mm-hmm. Crosby's cup, you know, and then at lunch they're cutting their apple with a jackknife. And,
yep.
You know, those are the guys you're like, okay, I need to get to know this guy because he's got some wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a Jay kind of guy.
Yeah, he was. It's funny. I would have thought of him as eating. He wasn't a gas station food guy. Groundies are big on the gas station food. Mm-hmm. They're big on Joe's go-to is the Crosby's pizza. Ugh. We'd stop on Crosby's and he'd love getting their pizza. We'd stop at the 490 truck stop.
Yep.
To get in Arizona on the way back. When we're Apu's. Up on. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I call them Habib's. But,
yeah. So Apu's and
in the morning, Burger. They have a great bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. It's like 4:25. They stack bacon as thick as they stack the sausage. That I'm watching this guy fry it in front of us using the same oil that came out of the big truck outside, and they're honestly phenomenal. So we stop on occasion to go there, but on the way back we stopped one time and they had I don't even remember what it was like. It was Red Hot's pizza or something like that, or it was bad. And he got some wings and a couple. He didn't like the pizza. He was like, pizza looks weird. So I got some wings. You want one? And he's like, oh, they're pretty. I said, no, I don't eat gas station chicken wings. He ate one. He's like, oh, they're pretty good. And I was like, all right, I'll try one. He gives it to me and it was soggy. Yeah. I mean, it was not, I regretted it. I'll say that.
I have a general rule.
He's huge on that.
I do not buy my meat where I buy my gas. There's just,
unless it's a Slim Jim.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe a Slim Jim. Like, it's just always been a general rule for me. I just can't.
Yeah. So. Jay was at what I was hinting at it or saying was Jay was not that. He brought his lunch every time. He was like, sure. I'm going to work. It's too expensive to buy lunch all the time.
That's an old timer.
We had a couple of guys that would go and they'd get Twinkies and everything else every morning. Yeah. I mean, the Little Debbie bag of donuts every morning. It was crazy. I don't know how they... But when you're working 60-hour weeks and you're making all this money doing, you know, trades, I guess you can afford a pack of Little Debbies. But he'd have his cut celery and he'd have his cut apples and he had them in a nice little container. And they were cold because he'd have his beers in there too, which were already in the fridge from the, you know, not actually, obviously, but it was... that was his move, was while he was driving the dump truck, he could reach in and grab a couple slices of celery or his carrots or whatever. Yeah. And I had made a comment about it one time and he's like, well, you don't stay as fit as I am. Well, I don't know if I consider him fit, but
also buy a case of beer on the way home.
Yeah.
So when I was running a crew, we'd have to stop every morning and we'd get the Holy Trinity of scratch off tickets, which was like the Win for Life, the Lucky Sevens, and I don't know, loose change was the other one. And then we'd get dip and we'd get coffee and, you know, then we'd be off to work. And it was every single morning.
See, like, our generation is huge on the idea that caffeine and nicotine put together creates protein. And so that's that's what our generation runs off of. Yep. It's the same thing, just a different look. Zins and Red Bull versus coffee and dip.
We lived on caffeine and nicotine. For sure. So, you're doing buckets. You're not climbing at this point.
And the state won't let us climb for insurance purposes. Yeah. But I'd love to get into it eventually. Is kind of my thought process. I'll get the money. I mean, it's a good grand or two just to get going. Yeah. Get enough gear to get in a tree and get a rope or two.
It's funny because you look at the saddle hunters, to bring it back to hunting. Saddle hunting is very similar.
Yeah.
You're strapping sticks to the tree instead of using spikes.
But I haven't looked into it, but I would love to see. I would believe it if it was like an arborist that brought that in, because a saddle, I saw the one that you're hunting out of, very, very similar.
Oh, yeah. They're basically just a bosun's chair, but what made out of, you know, cloth material as opposed to a wood. Seat that you would sit on.
Yeah.
When I was building ropes courses, I mean, that's what we would use as a bosun chair. You would put up your lineman's belt, and then you'd get up top and you would tie off and you'd hook your bosun's chair and you'd sit on that and then lean out to drill holes through the tree in order to put in the through bolts. It's all the same, you know, but they're charging an arm and a leg for this stuff.
They do in arborist stuff too. I was looking at Cheryl Tree has a beginner's kit of, you can get your choice of saddle, and then depending on the saddle, it varies the rope and the cost.
Yeah.
But their saddles, I mean, they're saddles very, very similar to what you're running, where it's a softer material, and you can get ones that are more supportive or less supportive kind of thing. Yeah. They got a couple of D-rings on the waist for a lineman's belt.
Yep.
You can get them with chest hookups and the works there. But and that's what I'd love to get into. Yeah. Just even around the property, I think it'd be fun to just get into some trees.
Have you try my saddle out. Like, I need to get – so they're making now like a back – so you have your saddle, but there's also a back strap that will hook in so that you have some back support to it. And I need to – look into that. I'll be at the Harrisburg show working for Catch and Release, and I know like Trophy Line will be there. Sean has told me he's going to be down there, so I need to talk to them a little bit more about it. But
I'm hoping this spring, once the weather warms up, to look into getting some climbing gear. And I've got my truck paid off now. I've got that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, it's so that's the next move. But yeah, so we're out of a bucket right now. Well, a lift and or bucket, and it's fun. I don't know if I prefer it over ground cutting. It's different, and that's what I like about it, is that it's something different. There's definitely more thought to it.
Sure.
Ground cutting, there's definitely thought, and there's definitely skill in terms of being able to put it where you want the tree to land. But being out of a bucket, there's definitely some more thought of, okay, am I going to rope this? If I'm going to rope it, do I need to just pull it off, or do I need to drop it down or descend it with a porter wrap? And, you know, then that kind of thing. And I don't have, it's just me that knows the techniques there. And it's funny. Joe's watched some videos and he asked essentially what you said is, okay, so could we just tie ropes to all these and lower them piece by piece and then not have to worry about, you know, you throwing them? And, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, we could, but takes twice as long because now I got to send up a rope. You have to untie the rope. You have to,
you've got to rig it.
Right.
You know,
which he was disappointed in because as a groundy, his job is to get to run a porter wrap. And if I'm handling it from the top, he's just sitting there with a hard hat on his head, hurting his neck, trying to look up, not into the sun.
Yep.
But
we've all been there.
Oh yeah. I was there. I mean, I really think that's the best place to learn. Is it on a three to four man felling crew is all you need for a bucket. You've got one guy in the lift, one guy running the porter wrap, and a guy untying the ropes and pulling trees on the ground.
Yeah.
And that's what my role was when I first came to Tri-State was I would stand next to whoever was roping, whether it was Ben or Tommy or Jay or whoever. Normally it was Ben. And he'd lower this tree and he'd say, all right, grab that top and pull it this way, or grab that top and pull it, push it, you know, whatever, and then untie it. And, I got to be a monkey essentially, yep. and we joked about it all the time because by the time we're done, we've got a top or three tops worth of tree piled up, and I'm climbing all the way through this brush pile find a rope, untie it, and send it back up.
Yeah, it's like hook tending.
And I'm climbing up there, hoping this branch doesn't break on me or this one. And every now and then you do. You step on a branch, it snaps, and you go head over heels, or you fall, and it's
your
fun.
Shins are beat up constantly.
And I'm wearing heavy steel toe boots that are not as supportive as I needed, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And getting to work on different crews. When I was at Harrisburg, I worked with two of the best fellers I've ever worked with, and the one was just a genuinely nice guy. They're both from Alabama. I mean, different from what they're used to, but and Mikey was just awesome. He was the one on the ground, and he was kind of mad he didn't get to climb, but it was the best situation for what we were in. And and he taught me in the week or two that I was felling with him, he taught me a lot, and it was cool because I wasn't there to work with them. I was there really to run an Avant and haul logs to the apprentice trucks or buck up for the apprentice trucks. I wasn't there to run on one of the rigging teams. I was there to do the removal of the logs and the slash and stuff. And I did a lot of that, but anytime I wasn't in Avant or there wasn't a need for it right then, I was going over to them and I was helping him.
Yeah.
And he, by the end of the 2 weeks, what really was cool was, he would look for me over some of the other guys, partly because I had worked with him. You know, Ben is probably a better roper than I am, but he didn't know their system. Yeah. So I could get in on that, and it was, didn't need necessarily to communicate every little thing. It was, we'd go over rope briefly at the beginning of a tree. This is the plan. And then as we're going, I already know where I'm pulling this top. You know, I don't need to be, and I'd always have my chaps on. And that was something I got in the habit of when I first started. It was, do I need to have my chaps on for this? It's kind of hot. I don't want to have them on. But then I came to realize if I had them on, it meant I got to cut. You know, I was the first one that was, hey, you got chaps on, go do this. And for me, a young guy that wanted to earn his way and wanted to learn, I took advantage of that.
And that's the key is wanting, you know, that you wanted to learn, that you're teachable. You know, somebody in the woods who wants to learn this stuff, I'll take any time they
would.
For sure. You know, over somebody who thinks they know it all.
Yep. So, yeah. Well, and that's part of why I hired Joe. Yeah. He's never cut before, which it sucks he's not bringing in his own experience and training, but it means that he's being trained under me, and he's going to do it the way I'd like to do it, the way I think is best. And he's going to, he might rope for me. You know, he's done it a little bit now already, and over time, he'll be the one that I turn to. Yeah. I might hire somebody that's got 5 years of roping experience, but I know I can trust Joe because we've done this kind of thing before.
Right, you know? Absolutely.
So.
Well, we're over an hour, so boy, it goes quick when
podcast,
we get talking.
We didn't know what we were going to talk about. Right.
We started out with crossbows. What is, like, what's the sketchiest tree situation you've been in? And we'll close with that.
Sketchiest tree situation I've been in. I did one at the parks that was, It was a very much so. I told Joe, I was like, A, you're going to stand away from me. And B, this is, and I hate this saying with passion, is the do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have the balls to do it the way you're telling people to do it, like personally, I'm not going to listen. If you're going to do it this way, I should be able to do it this way. And the way I've kind of gotten around that, my loophole for that, is I'll tell him, do as I say, but not as I do, until you're to my level.
Yeah.
And not that I'm some great guy or some great feller, but it's that he's newer. So until you've got some experience and you're confident that you can do this,
yep,
you're not doing it. You know, so it's one of those. I was just in a pile of some slash, and I had to, the tree was hung up, and I knew it was going to be one more cut, butt was going to swing down, and the whole thing was going to go backwards towards where I was.
Yeah.
And so it was either A, I'm going to put a little face on the side, and the butt's going to kick out the other way, and it's going to go where I'm hoping, or it's going to come towards where I'm standing, and I'm in a pile of slash, so running is not the most, as much
it's
as
not I, really an option.
I'm going to try,
yeah,
you know, but I'm not going to count on that. So it was, I did what I could to make sure it didn't go my way, and I was ready to jump. And that was one of the, at least memorably, one of the most sketchy, wasn't the closest, it went fine. So yeah. I don't really consider that a near miss or anything. It did what I wanted to, but it was sketchy. The nearest miss I had wasn't with a tree. It was with the Prentice boom. And this was first month I was there. At this point, I'm in a system kind of, okay, this is how I do this. Maybe the early second month. I knew what I was doing in terms of where I fit in on the crew. I was hauling brush. Yeah. I was going bucking these limbs from the first tree we dropped. They were already on they were going to drop a stick is what they were doing. And they tied it off to the Prentice, and Jay was swinging the boom to the Prentice, and he was pulling the stick over. It was nothing we hadn't done before. It just hadn't occurred to me that they were doing it because I was busy doing something else. Finally haul this brush up, step up from this little down little ditch kind of thing that I was in. And I step up, look over to see where Ben's felling, because I knew he was cutting and I wanted to get eyes on him before I made any other move. Turn, see him, and he's actively in the back cut. And the tree wasn't going to hit me. I was plenty far enough from that. It was the swing of Jay's boom. And so when that tree goes, that boom, he was already had pre-tensioned it. So it wasn't like he was going to cut his back cut and then Jay was going to slowly pull it over. It was leaning the other way. So he put tension on the line with the boom, and that the clam, which is, I don't know, probably a couple tons on its own, is lifted up into the air, which means now you got a couple of tons of force already pulling.
Right.
I step up, look over, see this stick. And just as I see it, that tree's going and the boom is swinging at me. And I don't know how fast it was going. It felt like a millisecond that I dove to the ground and it went over me.
Wow.
It wasn't, I dove to the side of it and it went to the left of me or to the right. It went over me. And I remember I was shaken up, and I look up and Jay goes, "You should be dead." And he was pissed. He was mad because he knew that if I died, it was going to be on him as far as he was concerned.
And it's funny, an operator will get pissed about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you almost died and it would have been on me.
Yeah.
You know,
and he, as much as I was there only a couple of months, he had kind of taken into some training on me and we had a good relationship there. But that was my wake up call of, okay, this is real. This is, you really got to keep your head on a swivel, you know.
I think for me, it was cutting on the west cut, and I was doing a domino cut, which I know you hate, but I had three trees.
I don't hate, I do them. I'm just saying you're not supposed to.
Right. But it was set up such a way that I'm like, okay, I'm going to use the first tree to knock the second tree to knock the third tree. And the first two went over perfect. And they hung up in the third.
Mm-hmm.
So now I got two trees hanging, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, "What do I open the face cut more? Do I open the back cut? Do I try and wedge it?" And I'm standing there looking at this thing, thinking, "I'm screwed. How am I going to do this?"
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the pop, and all three went. Oh my gosh, thank you, Jesus. And that's exactly what I said. There is so many times in the woods where I'm like, "Oh, thank you, Jesus." and it, you know, if I knew more than I know, like, then it probably wouldn't be, but there are more times when I'm cutting where I'm just like, oh, thank you, Lord. Thank mm-hmm. you for keeping me safe because yeah. I'm an idiot.
yeah.
Yep. So, well, thank you, Boomer, for the insight into the logging arborist world. And it's good to have you have your expertise on the team and mm-hmm. then to have Emily's expertise as a forest manager.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and are in the Western New York State area and are looking for consulting, we do that. Beards Creek, you can find us on Instagram, direct message, or you can email us at beardscreekadventures@gmail.com. But we do land management. We'll write out an entire plan for you, and we do have still some room that we can do, we can schedule for some implementation. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll want to get those in earlier than, you know, sooner than later. And hopefully the stories you heard tonight don't scare you away. We've got a lot of experience.
I only give the fun ones. I don't get the day-to-day when everything's going right isn't fun.
Right, exactly. So thank you for listening. And, you know, if you're following along on Spotify or Apple or wherever else you get your podcast, be sure to like these, subscribe, and leave a comment, too, if you like what we're doing. And next week, go ahead.
Or if you have something you want us to discuss.
Yeah.
You know, we'll bring people on and we talk to them, but when it's just you and I, any bit of information you guys want discussed, if you have certain topics, put those in the comments and we'll be sure to get to those.
Yeah, that's helpful for us as well. We'd love to, we definitely have a bend towards the habitat side, but we're hunters at heart. And and going into habitat season now, we don't want to lose the hunting piece of it too. So,
right.
Or fly fishing for that matter.
Yeah. So. I'm really planning to do more of that this year.
Yeah. We should do more fly fishing. All right, folks. Thanks. And God bless. We'll see you next week.